on that same vein of relationship management and social awareness is like the ability to actively listen. I feel like we throw this out there a lot, but taking a moment to really stop thinking about, you know, stop thinking about what you're about to say next and actually listen to the person or the people that are saying, it's a very difficult skill to hone and perfect.
One, two.
Welcome to the Emotional Intelligence Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection of emotional intelligence and leadership. And whether you're a seasoned executive or just starting out in your leadership journey, we're going to share practical tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you develop your emotional intelligence and achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take your leadership skills to the next level. I'm Ismail.
And I'm Samir.
Hey, Samir.
Hey.
Samir, in today's fast-paced workplace, EQ has really become a crucial skill for navigating relationships and promoting productivity.
Yep.
And with respect to conflict resolution, recent studies reveal that those with those high EQ skills, mm-hmm. they tend to favor more collaborative approaches when it comes to handling conflicts.
Okay.
And the impact of, you know, that high EQ when it comes to conflict resolution, it's tending towards this positive impact on efficiency in just the overall organization.
Oh, okay. And so the question then comes up, Ismail, is like, how do we apply these insights or these emotional intelligence skills in our day-to-day interactions, right? Particularly mm-hmm. when we're dealing with extremely difficult, challenging coworkers sometimes, or, you know, difficult clients, right? So it's essential to keep in mind that everyone is operating from their own level of consciousness and they're mm-hmm. doing their best with the resources that they have. But in this podcast, you know, we will be exploring in particular practical ways to harness emotional intelligence to help you become better at conflict resolution in the workplace, which is something that we all deal with every single day, whether they're sure. small conflicts or big ones, extremely material or impactful conflicts. And sometimes they're mm-hmm. not as much, but they're still important to address. So let's do it. Are you ready to jump right in, Ismail?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it. All right. So Ismail, according to Vital Smart, which is a training organizational development company, their studies have shown that 8 hours approximately get wasted for each conflict that's left unresolved. So if you think about your company or any company and 8 hours of inefficiency, what that can create from a just overall cost perspective. And then you multiply that by the number of unresolved conflicts. This is a huge source of inefficiency at companies. And it's kind of like this huge hidden cost, right? It's like when you lift the rug, oftentimes, you know, you're trying to figure out what's going on with the numbers, but you don't realize that conflicts and unresolved conflicts could be a major source of that inefficiency that a company is facing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, during this time of cost cutting and number crunching, it's not really something I'm sure people really look at. Yeah. And, you know, another thing that folks are really talking about in organizations is just like this overall culture. They're looking mm-hmm. for a culture that fits them. What's the culture like? And I think it's just something that is far more powerful than folks have ever thought of before, right, in the mm-hmm. workplace. And I mean, without going into too much detail, I'd say like conflict is one of those culture killers.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I'm not going to say it's like this make it or break it sort of thing, but certainly if you have a company, I think it's fair to say that if you have a company with a lot of conflict, you're going to have a company with probably poor culture. Mm-hmm. And not to mention the fact that I would say that it probably creates a lot of drama as well.
Yeah.
And just in general, if we're talking about productivity, I'm not a I'm not certain that there's any productivity in a company with high drama.
Yeah. I mean, simply said, drama kills productivity.
Agreed.
And so, you know, from my experience, it's not usually conflicts that arise typically between team members directly, right? So in my experience, I've noticed that if, you know, within a team, things are usually pretty good. It's where conflict usually arises typically in cross-departmental spaces, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of, so there's a lot of dynamics at play. And so cross-departmentally, you know, it slows down production. It can create issues with customer relations. So conflict resolution, right? And willingness to do it and doing it well, it has to be part of the culture of the company. It has to be within the fabric. And I'd argue that it's really a top down type of skill. You know, there's if you have strong EQ leaders that truly adopt that one team approach and they care about the collective needs of the business, that will promote a culture of conflict resolution where, you know, from the highest level, people are sitting across the table with a common concern for the welfare of the business.
You know, and it's interesting because you see a lot of organizations, they'll switch their CEOs out and say like, okay, well, now that we had an issue, we had this poor culture, and now we've got a new CEO and it's going to fix the problem. And I would say that certainly that goes a long way to starting to fix the problem, as long as they're committed to changing the culture first, like really in its DNA. And I think there's we all know Uber.
Yeah.
And they've had some problems. I'm pretty sure you're all aware of those. And they changed out there. Like, there was this bro culture. There's a couple companies that had this. McDonald's was one and Uber was the other. And they had this really challenging bro culture. And frankly, changing out their CEO, like you said, top down, was just the beginning of starting to change that culture.
So what additional types of things do you feel beyond just like a CEO change, like, could lead to conflict resolution, kind of getting that airspace or that attention that it needs, right? Where do you start, Ismail, like when you have to deal with a conflict?
I mean, I think first thing is everyone has to recognize that conflict is just rooted in emotions. And there's all these levers and strings, like marionette, that you can move that essentially start the correction of a conflict, right? Or going towards conflict resolution. It's like people might feel wronged or abused in a situation, and things like feeling underappreciated. These are some pretty simple, but very potent triggers, and just being able to kind of assess those, have some good communication around that. And just ultimately, at the end of the day, some good emotion management, right? And I think it's really important to call out, though. One thing I really want, and I'm guilty of this, is that I think it's really hard for leaders or managers to not put on that like mama bear hat and go out and into the ring or go to battle for their teams. It's pretty hard to do, to kind of let things be sometimes.
Yeah, and we're going to get into, I think, later in this podcast, some of those like more practical ways that that you would address a conflict. But I agree with you. I think that's really hard for leaders a lot of times to not take that mama bear approach. But when you look at high EQ leaders, I think they're really well equipped and able to see the bigger picture, right? So, you know, I had a mentor who once told me that, you know, managers, they protect their unit, you know, and they care about the needs of their teams. Leaders, on the other hand, they care about the welfare of the entire organization.
Right.
And so that's where I start when I need to manage a conflict, right? I always start from the perspective of what's best for the company. And sometimes, you know, when your team feels wronged or they feel underappreciated, like you mentioned, you need to bring them into that same mindset with you. So I think that's number one, right? Is setting a perspective, kind of baselining the conversation is really, really important. And resolving conflicts, it's such a critical skill, right? Such a critical skill. And we talked about how once you've set that stage of, okay, we're going to do what's best for the company here, there are EQ skills, specific EQ skills that you can apply that can become a major differentiator when it comes to outcomes of a conflict, right? And it starts really with managing emotion, right? And so we've talked about in our previous episodes, and they come up in every episode because we know how important they are. There's our four core competencies of EQ. Yes. And those four competencies are more important in conflict management than anywhere else, right? Because all four competencies are going to play such a critical role. So first and foremost, we talk about self-awareness, right? And self-management. Those are two of our core competencies, right? And staying calm under in a conflict is so critically important, right? So being able to manage the stress of everybody involved, right? Your team is upset. You may have an upset customer. You may have an upset boss. You may have another department that's upset, right? So staying calm in those situations and managing the stress, not just your own stress, because, you know, me, I'm a worrier. I go directly to the worst case scenario and that's where I start. And so I have to manage my own stress and the stress of others around me so that I'm able to see clearly, because you have to be able to accurately interpret what is actually happening, right? And so part of that too is giving off the impression of being calm. So your voice, right? Your tone, your body language, keep it neutral, right? We talk about psychological safety, like make people feel like talking to you about what's going on. When you're in a discovery mode, you need to be open. You need people to feel open, that they can come to you and they can tell you stuff, you know, and really just maintain the focus on the conflict itself, right? What exactly is going on? Don't waver into too much into historicals, right? Where we start, like, you hear, like, they do this all the time. Remember this and remember that time. And, you know, so keep the focus on the particular conflict that you're dealing with, right? And then another thing that really sticks out to me, and it's something that, like, I've kind of struggled with certain people, it's seeing the good in others, right? When you approach a conflict, like you talk about kind of leaving those historicals at the front door, you know, like leaving those past experiences behind. And sometimes, you know, you need to use that as a reference point. And so I'm not saying to completely leave it behind, but you got to be able to look at this situation that's in front of you by leaving like those preconceived kind of speculative notions like out of the equation, right? And so
for sure,
you know, I've dealt with individuals in the past that have wronged me over and over and over again. And each time that they do something, even if it's something really small, I struggle to see the good in them, you know, and I try really hard, but like, you gotta be able to do that. And so I think that, it's so critical. And then you do that, this enough over time, right? You follow these self-awareness, self-management kind of tactics, and you're going to see that you're actually able to solve conflicts a lot easier, and you'll start to even avoid conflicts, you know, which is really the end goal, right? Is to avoid conflict. It's not just to be good at resolving conflicts, but also be good at not creating conflict too.
100%. I mean, essentially you're able to tamp down, put out the fire really, really quickly before it even starts, or before maybe you even notice that there is one. Which I think is fantastic. I certainly would love to hear some of the stories at some point about those people that have those preconceived notions about, because everyone has them. Everyone has them. It's quite noble, actually. It's very noble of you to bring that up and take an active take an active step in trying to leave those at the door. It is really, really, even if you get wronged every single time, it's still a good practice.
And it goes back to what you were saying as well, is like, you know, it's the inefficiency that these conflicts create. Like, if you're just kind of going off of, you know, this person's wronged me so many times, I know they're wronging me again, and you just go down that path, but it's the wrong path, then you're creating more inefficiency, right? You're wasting even more time.
Right. I'm sure there's going to be several listeners will disagree with this. Mm-hmm. I still think, though, it's better to take the high road.
Yeah.
And that, the one time that that really works out for you pays for itself in spades.
Yeah. I've been on the other end of that a few times where I haven't taken the high road, and the regret that, you know, it's not worth it to me in the end, you know, not learned through over time, where it's like, man, it would have just been so much better if I just let that go, but I didn't. And now I struggled through it, you know.
For the most part, those regrets, actually, those happen to me in my personal life. I mean, these skills, they cross over, right? Personal work life. But there's several times where very quickly after the fact, I'm kind of like, I wish I didn't say that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you have to go on that. We've mentioned this before, like the apology tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, let me schedule this call to apologize.
Yeah.
Right. As you were going through, so you covered self-awareness and self-management.
Right.
And there's the other two, of course, remaining social awareness and relationship management.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you look at those two, one of the steps that you have to take is you do have to take a breath and analyze the emotional state of either the other party or parties or the situation, and just be able to use your eyes almost as well as your ears, but analyzing the nonverbals.
Correct.
And you want to try and not be like this dismissive person, or you might have the words that aren't dismissive, but like the body language might be dismissive. And that's also like this, maybe it's unnatural or sorry, this subconscious, thing that you do. So just having some respect, around just even just a baseline level of body language that shows that, okay, I'm ready to listen and I'm open here.
And don't minimize, right? Like,
yes,
dismissive is one thing. And then minimizing is also something that we've all been guilty of at different times. So definitely being conscious of that too.
For sure. And I mean, take the time to empathize with the other person as well. Mm-hmm. In our most recent episode, we talked a lot about empathy and negotiation. Mm-hmm. This is what this is, like conflict resolution and negotiation. They kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that just, this has been something that's been apparent, I'm going to say, throughout my entire career, mm-hmm. like day one, is you should really be mindful of the cultural differences that exist in the parties that you're having this conflict with.
Sure.
Because there are a ton of nonverbal cues that can be misconstrued. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm going to tell you.
And verbal cues too, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, language. Use of language in certain situations. Absolutely. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite nonverbals is, I think, so you're familiar with it. A lot of people who are listening will probably be familiar with it, but it's like the South Indian, East Indian head bob versus head nod. So sometimes when you're having a conversation with someone, like culturally, they'll like bob their head, denoting yes, they understand what you're saying, and say it was like an acknowledgement of a negative event that occurred. They're bobbing their head, which to me, from a North American perspective, is like, that's right, yes. Mm-hmm. And versus where it looks like they should be saying no, they should be like maybe shaking their head, saying yes, I acknowledge that that was the wrong thing to do, and it really throws you off. It throws you off. And I'm not saying like this from a stereotyping perspective. I'm telling you from personal experience that this has happened to me, and I find it fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to, because you know what? For me, it was easy to catch and to just help clarify, but that's not for everyone. I think it's really, really important. And then I had this other experience. I can't say this was necessarily this particular issue was a conflict, but I do think it could have created conflict. And I was in a situation where there's a team member that there's an issue with body odor, right?
Okay.
And I mean, nothing crazy, probably something that could have been an easy fix, but I personally was so nervous to bring this up because I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know if they would be offended. I didn't know if I was going to do I have to, and you know, in that situation, I didn't have like this huge HR department to go to and be like, hey, what's our policy on this?
On body odor.
On body odor, right? Yeah. I mean, I couldn't look it up on the intranet. No. Yeah. And so, but really what ended up happening was it was one conversation, one time, issue resolved.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating that sometimes, like, I just went out on a limb, even though I was super nervous, and it worked out in my favor.
Right? Yeah.
It worked out in my favor.
And you probably, like you said, you were proactive and potentially avoided a larger conflict, right?
Yes. Yes. 100%. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, those are two interesting examples. Yeah. But just on that same vein of relationship management and social awareness is like the ability to actively listen. I feel like we throw this out there a lot, but taking a moment to really stop thinking about, you know, stop thinking about what you're about to say next and actually listen to the person or the people that are saying, it's a very difficult skill to hone and perfect.
Especially during the heat of a conflict. But we also talked about how people want to be heard, right? They want to be heard when they're upset. And so sometimes and that could be so critical in quelling a conflict. It's just sitting and really listening and being open and having an open mind.
That's right. And just taking that moment, like on that same front, to just like be forgiving of a situation. If you think that it's something that you can move on from, is just, you know, do it.
Yeah.
Be like, forgive and move on. Think about the long-term relationship that either you have or are going to build in that particular situation.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. I think for me, like when a conflict arises on my team, I'm never really nervous because I've put in the equity with my peers on the leadership team, and I've worked on those relationships over time to know that if something happens, like, we will work it out. Like, because because we've worked together for a long time. There's been times when I've asked them for forgiveness. There's been times they've asked me for forgiveness, and we've been able to move on, right? Because we've looked at that collective overall, what's good for the company, what's good for the business. And that's really so important when approaching a conflict. But you know what, Smell, I think these are all like such awesome practical tips, right? Looking at it from the perspective of those four core competencies of EQ, self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship management, we see the crossover. It's naturally there. People with higher EQ are going to be able to apply all of these practical tips very easily. Mm-hmm. But I do think before we wrap up, I want to leave the listener with at least a basic framework for how they can approach a conflict and a formula, if you will, for how they can kind of work through a conflict.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's a great plan. Why don't we hop right into that? But before that, how about we just take a really, really quick break? Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to stay updated on all the latest content and behind the scenes action, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and several other places by using the link in the show notes. And if it's not too much trouble, we'd love for you to leave a review and share this episode with some of your friends. Your support means everything to us, and we can't wait to connect with you online. Now, let's get back to the show. So, Samir, we just went over the core competencies of EQ, right? And I think what we have an opportunity to do now, I don't know if you can hear that, but that was a massive thunderbolt.
That was crazy.
Yeah. So what I think we can go through is just some really practical tips on how to actually go through the process of managing a conflict. And first and foremost, I think the number one skill has to be communication.
Sure, of course.
Right? And fast follower, when these go hand in hand, is the ability to negotiate. Right? So like a conflict that's resolved correctly, on how, like, you know, you going through the process of resolving a conflict, it can be a learned skill. And I'm going to just make a bold statement, say that anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. Anyone can do it if they take a moment. And because at the end of the day, and the reason why it's a bold statement is because I think the first step is acknowledgement, right? Mm-hmm. Acknowledging that there is an issue. Mm-hmm. And fact is that opens the door to creating a solution, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives people, gives the other party and yourself to express their feelings and frankly, their emotions of mm-hmm. what's going on. And if you're able to communicate well, you can affirm those emotions. You're, you know, essentially saying that I hear what you're saying. I hear how it made you feel. Mm-hmm. And it's at that moment that the real true problem solving can start.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I really like that. Like that acknowledgement is almost like you're giving them permission, right? And that's mm-hmm. so key, right? And so I think I'll take it even a step further. Like during mm-hmm. that acknowledgement phase, it's so critical to not be like a quote unquote, like blame thrower, right? Like where you're just quick to say, you know, I found the root of the problem and it was your fault, you know? Mm. And I think the focus should be on what is right instead of focusing on who is right.
Right.
And yeah. So when mm-hmm. you sit down across a table from somebody and now you're having to resolve a conflict, really just not even bringing up who's at fault, right? Like, and keeping that same approach, like, and I know I've said this before about the company first, the business first, it really doesn't matter, right? And so in the, like, you know, the business I'm in, like a lot of times our conflicts are cross-departmental issues.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And we're in project-based work. So, you know, when there's an issue, everybody, we have to analyze the root cause of every step of the process, right? So everyone runs kind of a different leg of the relay race, you can say. And so it's usually the person who drops the baton who gets the heat, right? But for myself as a leader, you know, I have to think about the entirety of the process from the beginning of the race to the end, like where was the baton truly dropped? Because it might be different if you look at it and you say, you know, this person was the person who got caught, but really it was caused by like something that happened 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And so I can't just jump in defending my team, right? I need to think about where things truly went wrong. And so if it was my team, that's okay, right? We'll mm-hmm. fix it. But if it wasn't my team, we'll still step in and fix it, right? Agreed. And that approach is so critical when managing a conflict. And that's really hard for people to say like, hey, it wasn't even my fault, but I'm still going to help because I'm going to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if it wasn't my fault or if it was, like the approach has to be the same to resolve the issue. And
I think
it's tough to do, but I think it's really helpful when you take that approach.
I have, I think, officially that image of the baton dropping stuck in my head now when it comes to problem solving. I'm like, where is said baton bouncing at the
moment? Yeah, exactly. Right? And, you got to follow. Like you got to follow the popcorn trail together.
Yes. Like you had said earlier, it's not trying to figure out like who was right, who was wrong, right? It's the goal is really to find just this common ground so that you can work through a solution. Mm-hmm. Personally, I would say that the biggest leap for conflict resolution that I made personally as a leader was not trying to actually figure out who made a mistake, right? If you need to, you can do that way down the road.
Yeah.
Figure that out later. If you're just trying to avoid something for practical reasons in the future, you can do it later. But really, it's about trying to find, okay, how can we fix this? Who is going to do what to get to a solution that satisfies both parties' needs or whomever is involved, satisfy the most number of people's needs? That's really where you want to get to. And you might need to explore 30 options. Well, that's probably a bit extreme. You might need to you're going to need to look at multiple options to figure out how that's going to work, right? Mm-hmm. And going through. So if you have a lot of options on the table, maybe just looking at understanding why each of those helps will get to something that's really quite effective.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say that that's not always a solution. May not always happen, or agreement on what the problem is even may not happen. But in that case, at least agreeing that there actually is a problem.
Yeah.
Bare minimum, right? Yeah,
I think sometimes even that is tough, you know,
yeah,
to get people agreed. To agree that there is a problem because
right.
some people might just say, I don't see anything wrong with this situation.
Speaking of that, speaking of like people not agreeing, I've been in situations where, well, a specific situation where I had a team member that there were some clear, at least from my perspective, there's some clear challenges and opportunities to kind of move forward on some significant, this is very vague, right? But mm-hmm. significant areas of work. And we went through multiple iterations, both like as individually, right? There are three or four of us that were trying to work through kind of a significant issue. And it kind of, as sad as it was like, you know, a 3-to-1 kind of a case or, you know, outcome, but it didn't matter what we threw out on the table as here's what we think we can do to fix it. Here's what we think the problem is. It was not going to be agreed upon in terms of an actual actionable outcome. Mm. But what I will say is that what helped me personally is that at the end of the day, at the very least, we agreed, okay, there is a problem. Like we got an issue here.
Yeah.
We didn't come to a conclusion or a solution or an agreement on what to do next. But what we did close after, like, you know, we'll say a couple of weeks, significant amount of time, in my opinion, was that, yeah, we got a problem here and let's stop there before things get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, when we talk about efficiency and time, like sometimes that is the resolution to the conflict, right? It's just an agreement that, look, we got a problem. Let's table it. Right. But it is an issue. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, in a traditional sort of in conflict resolution management scenario, you would come up with a solution, right? And you would have something that both parties can agree on that, hey, look, this is how we're going to approach this moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so for the last kind of step, I would say, is you really got to have a really good plan on who's doing what. And then you have to follow up that plan with action and then maintain accountability, right? So that's such a important part of the conflict resolving itself is not just having the conversation and everyone feeling good and shaking hands. It's like, all right, now let's go and actually do what we said we're going to do and put some accountability on this. And that's where, you know, something as simple as an email after a conversation with like ownership and need by dates and really just flushing out who's doing what and by when. Mm-hmm. is sort of that last step in the conflict fully being resolved.
For sure. And I mean, speaking of what you just described there, I can tell that this is something that you're very good at. Not that, and the reason why is because of, even as you and I have been going through this journey of creating this podcast, one of the things that I've really appreciated is that there's concrete outcomes after a meeting that we're going to have. And it frankly is very easy to go and execute.
Yeah.
And also very easy to go and see like what you haven't done and who hasn't done what, which is not the case with us, but is very easy to go through in a work environment when you're looking at a very significant issue. But, you know, Samir, a lot of what we've talked about, it can be pretty intimidating. I agree. For that reason, I think a lot of people might try and avoid it. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of different approaches that you can take on trying to conflict resolution.
Yeah.
But I think really the most important thing that you can do is take some sort of action and just not let it fester.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And it all kind of goes back to the statement we made about the conflict unresolved, creating 8 hours of inefficiency times the number of conflicts you have in your organization. That's huge. That's huge. Mm-hmm. So today we talked about how the core four EQ skills tied directly to conflict resolution. So applying those EQ skills that you already have or that you're working to develop by listening to this podcast are going to be crucial to help you in your next conflict resolution situation. And then we provided you guys with a framework of how you should approach your next conflict by being, you know, the things we've talked about, like being open and accepting that there is a conflict and then trying to find common ground and putting a plan together and then executing on the plan and holding people accountable. So critical. But yeah, thank you guys so much for joining us for this really important topic, one that a lot of leaders struggle with, but it could be not too bad if you really just follow these steps and use those EQ skills that you've been working on.
Thanks, Mir, and thanks everyone for listening. Until our next episode, remember the famous words of Mahatma Gandhi: peace is not the absence of conflict, but the ability to cope with it.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Emotional Intelligence Podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more people. If you're interested in learning more about the topics we discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. You can find them by visiting our website. And if you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at info@emotionalintelligence.com or connect with us on social media by using the links in the show notes.